Welcome to Tori Mecha, Nach Yomi, with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rena Foreman, and today we will be studying Yechezkel, Perek Yotet, Chapter 19. Our perek is composed of two sections, each describing a mashal. In the first section, we encounter a mashal about a lioness and her cubs. And in the second, we once again encounter our friend, the grapevine. Here's the first mashal. Veta, Sakina el Nesiyei Yisrael. This is a kina, a lament, for the princes of Israel. The amarta, this is what you should say to them. Ma im chalavi bein arayot ravatsa betok firim ribtagu reha. What was your mother, a lioness? She couched among lions. In the midst of the young lions, she nourished her cubs. Vatal echad migureha kfir haya. She brought up one of her cubs. He became a young lion. Vilmod litrov teref. He learned to catch prey. Adama fell. He devoured a man. The nations heard of him. He was taken into their pit. And they brought him with hooks to the land of Mitzrayim, to the land of Egypt. The lioness in our perek raises her cubs, one of which begins to grow up and learns how to hunt. The cub develops a taste for human flesh and eventually attacks a human. The nations hear of this and trap him, bringing him to Mitzrayim in chains. The text then goes on to tell us about another lion raised by this mother lion when he was a cub. V'tikach echad migureha kfir samatu, v'yitalech b'toch arayot kfir haya, v'yilmad litrov teref adam achal, v'yida amanotav v'arehim hechariv, v'teisham eretz umloa mikol shagato. Eventually, this other lion also develops a taste for flesh. This second lion kills people, destroys their cities, and lays waste to their land. This time, when the nations come and trap the second lion, they bring him in chains to Bavel. Vayivu el Eretz Bavel. In the second section of our perek, we have a mashal about a fruitful, flowering vine that is planted near a water source. It has strong branches and was raised higher than the other trees. But it became detached in anger and thrown to the ground, drying up its strong branches and burning all its leaves. It's then replanted in the desert, where a fire comes and burns its fruit, leaving it empty. What could these two mashalim be describing? Let's think about the imagery of the lion and the grapevine. Do we know of anyone who's compared it to both a lion and a grapevine? Let's go back to Birkat Yaakov, the brachot that Yaakov gave his children at the end of his life. It's not the first time Yechezkel has been referencing these brachot. If you recall, in Perek Tetvav, Yechezkel seems to compare Yehuda to a grapevine, following those brachot to Yehuda back in Bereishit. But what is interesting is that in those brachot, Yehuda is compared to something else as well, a lion of all things. Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Miterev B'ni Alita. A lion's cub is Yehuda. From prey, my son, you have risen up. Sounds a lot like our perek in Yechezkel, no? Is it coincidental that the two mashalim in our perek involved the two things that Yehuda is compared to? It seems like Yechezkel is once again referencing Yehuda using language and imagery taken from Bereishit. And let's think about something else. Let's think about the place that each lion gets taken to. One is taken to Mitzrayim, and the other is taken to Bavel. Both are led against their will. Starting to sound familiar? It reminds me, at least, of the two exiles that the Jewish people go through. The first of those is the exile from Egypt, and the second is Galut Bavel. How do these exiles come about? Sefer Yechezkel and our perek seems to suggest that a similar dynamic was at play in each. Let's look at the first one, the reference to the Galut of Mitzrayim. Let's go back to the words of the text. Ma'im chalavi bein arayot ravatza. A lioness crouches among lions. She has many baby cubs. One of the lion cubs, referred to as a gur, comes forth. Do we know of anyone that is famously referred to as a gur? Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Gur is the term used in the Bracha of Yaakov to describe Yehuda. And let's look at what this lion cub does. Ve'ilmad likrov teref adam achal. This cub learns to hunt and eat a human. These words, mitrov teref, ring a bell too. Remember what Yaakov says to his sons when they trick him by showing him Yosef's bloodstained coat? Vayomer ketonet bni chayara a'achalatu tarov tarav Yosef. When he sees the coat, Yaakov explains that Yosef must have been eaten alive. Notice now that our parak in Yechezkel echoes the same language of tarov tarav, together with eating. Vilmad b'trov taref adam achal. Let's hold on to that thought. Back to Yechezkel. The next thing we hear about this lion is Vayishma'u elav goyim b'shachtam nitpas. The nations heard and trapped him in their shachat, in their pit. A pit that's also familiar to us from the story of Yosef. The brothers put Yosef in a pit. And nations? After Yosef was thrown into the pit, Yehuda suggested selling him to another nation. And back in Yechezkel, the next thing we hear about the lion in our mashal is Vayevi'uhu bachachim el eretz Mitzrayim. The nations brought him to Mitzrayim in chains. That's what happened to Yosef, right? Someone kidnapped him and sent him down to Mitzrayim, putting him in a pit with chains. And who did that? A lion cub did it, a reference to our friend, brother of Yosef, Yehuda, the Gur lion cub as described in his bracha. So to sum it all up, once upon a time, one of Yaakov's cubs, the lion Yehuda, wanted to kill Tarov Torav, his brother Yosef. His original plan was to allow him to be killed, achal, once Yosef was thrown into the pit. But, as Yechezkel tells us, the nations overheard, Vayishma'u. Somehow nations overheard what happened to Yosef, the victim of this little lion. What in the world could that mean? Well, the language of Vayishma'u here seems actually to pick up on something we hear back in the story of Yosef in the pit. Yehuda was telling the brothers about his idea to sell Yosef as a slave, and the text there tells us the brothers listened to Yehuda, Vayishma'u Echav. In the end, though, nations did what Yehuda suggested to his brothers. The text tells us, I'm reading this according to the Rashbam and Bereishit, that the Midianim pulled Yosef out of the pit and sold him off to Egypt. So, it is as if the Midianim listened, Vayishma'u, to that plot of Yehuda when they found Yosef. They then just coincidentally did what Yehuda and the brothers had been talking about doing when they sat down to eat bread over behind the next hill. The Midianim, and then the Yishmaelim, trapped him, perhaps even putting him in chains. Vayivi'uhu bachachim al aretz Mitzrayim, in the words of Yechezkel, they took him out from their pit, in which he was caught, and brought him down to Mitzrayim. But here's the twist. In the end, the little lion who was so violent, what he plotted was done to him. He himself was caught in the trap and taken down to Mitzrayim. And so it was. Yehuda was exiled down to slavery in Mitzrayim, along with his brothers. The story of Mechirat Yosef, the sale of Yosef, instigated by Yehuda, reflected in the mashal of the lion in our parak, is how it all began. It is what brought the Jews down to Mitzrayim, leading us to what we know of as Galut Mitzrayim. Yechezkel continues, giving us a sweeping view of history. The parak continues and tells us that a version of this happened a second time as well. In other words, a similar story is what leads to Galut Bavel. That seems to be the point of the mashal of the second lion. In the second mashal, there is another little lion. V'yitalech b'toch ha'ariyot kfir hayah, and like his predecessor, he too learns how to hunt and gets violent and becomes dangerous to people. The text of Yechezkel goes on to tell us more about the second lion. He destroys cities, laying them barren from the mere impact of his voice. And like the first lion, the nations gathered around him. They trapped him in their pit and took him in chains. And once more, the lion was taken away. But this time, the place of exile was not Egypt, but Bavel. The mashal here again seems to describe Yehuda. But this time, it's not the person Yehuda. It's Malchut Yehuda, the kingdom that emerged from Yehuda, the son of Yaakov. The behavior of this lion seems to match the corruption of the kings of Yehuda. They allowed murder to go unchecked throughout the kingdom. The lion has a taste for human flesh. The nations trap the king of Yehuda, and like his ancestor, the original Yehuda, he's eventually exiled to Bavel. L'ma'an lo yishama Kolo'od El Hari Yisrael, so his voice will no longer be heard on the mountains of Israel. What's more, the capture in a net, which Yechezkel speaks about here, evokes the language used to describe the downfall of Tzidkiyahu in earlier Perkim. Bottom line, this second lion seems to reflect the galut that the nation of Yehuda is in process of experiencing now at the time of Yechezkel. Yechezkel actually isn't the only one to refer obliquely to the previous exiles of Israel and suggest that one exile is connected to another. Take a look for a minute at Sefer Yirmiyahu. In Yirmiyahu, Perek Chaf Chet, as exile seems imminent, look what happens to Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel's contemporary himself. Vayikhu Yirmiyahu, vayashlichu oto el habor, Malkiyahu ben hamelech asher b'chatzer matara, vayashachu et Yirmiyahu b'chavalim, uvabor ein mayim. They threw Yirmiyahu into a pit, just as Yosef was thrown into a pit. By the way, that phrase vayashlichu el habor is almost identical to Yosef's words when he got thrown into a pit, vayashlichu oto habora. And guess what? The pit in Yirmiyahu, ein bo mayim, had no water, just like the pit Yosef was thrown into. Vayimshachu Yirmiyahu b'chavalim, vayalu oto min habor. Later, they pulled Yirmiyahu, vayimshachu Yirmiyahu b'chavalim, vayalu oto min habor. Later, they pulled Yirmiyahu, Bayim Shechu, and lifted him from the pit. These words are identical to the words used to describe Yosef being pulled out of the pit. What does it all mean? Somehow, pits and chains accompany us in both exiles. It's as if the second time Israel goes down into exile, this time Bavel, the events of the day are destined to mirror the very galut we experienced, the one that took us down to Mitzrayim. Yirmiyahu, in a way, is evoking the same broad connection between exiles that Yechezkel seems to speak about in our parak. Let's now turn our attention to the second mashal in our parak. The second half of the parak picks up on the vineyard themes which we saw earlier in Yechezkel. As we mentioned, they have their original source in that other part of Yehuda's bracha at the end of Brishi. Let's read from Yechezkel for a moment. Ibcha kagefen bedamcha, almayim shtula poriya v'anafahaita mimayim rabim. Yehuda was initially planted like a grapevine with plenty of water. This vine was made up of strong sticks, kind of like the scepters of Moshlim, kings or rulers. Of course, speaking of Yehuda, royalty is something that we immediately associate with him. And that very language also echoes the language of Yehuda's bracha in Breishi. To be specific, in Yaakov's bracha to Yehuda, right before we are introduced to the grapevine, the word shevet is used to describe the royalty that is Yehuda's legacy. Lo yasur shevet mi Yehuda, mechokek mi ben raglav. A shevet, stick used by rulers, in other words, a scepter, will never leave Yehuda. Kingship will always be associated with Yehuda. The imagery Yechezkel crafts for us makes it seem almost as though the branches of Yehuda, the grapevine, are actually scepters representing Yehuda's rulership. As Yechezkel goes on to describe, v'tikba ko mato al bein avotim, this grapevine grew in stature and had many branches, seemingly an allusion to the height and grandeur of Yehuda's malchut, his kingship. However, Yechezkel tells us, this idyllic state expressed in this bracha to Yehuda will not last. What will ultimately happen is, the vine, which was so well situated, will find itself plucked away in anger and cast to the ground. The ruach hakadim, the fruits of this vine, which was once rooted in water, dry up. The stick of its strength, once its scepter, its symbol of rulership, was eaten by fire. And now, instead of being planted in plenty of water as it initially was, it is replanted in the desert, a dry and thirsty land. Allowing a fire from within to eat its fruits, leaving her without the mateh, without the scepter, the stick of rulership. Our parak in Yechezkel is using the bracha of Yehuda almost entirely as its touchstone. Its first half mirrors the first part of Yehuda's blessing, and its second half mirrors the second part of that blessing. What are we to learn from these mishalim referencing these two exiles? It is interesting that the parak is bookended in its first and last psukim by a reference to a kina. All those parables are really a kina, a lament. In the first pasuk in our parak, sa kina al nesiyei Yisrael, and the last pasuk, Kinahi vatihila kina. What is a kina? Where do we know that word from? We're familiar with the word kina from the keynote we read on Tisha B'Av. Keynote are lamentations, cries of woe. So all this in Yechezkel is really a lament. What is the nature of the lament in our parak? It is a lament about the fall of Yehuda, and it is addressed, according to the first verse of the parak, to the leaders of Yehuda, to those who had the capacity to influence the direction of the kingdom of Yehuda. The nation of Yehuda had so much potential. It was strong as a lion, fruitful, and well-rooted as a well-planted tree. But nevertheless, it is exiled, cast out of the land, uprooted. She's plucked out because of her misdeeds. I'd like to close with a short reflection on that word for chains in our parak, the chains that take Yehuda to exile. The word is chachim. It is an unusual word. It reminds us of another famous phrase from elsewhere in Tanakh, chachim. In Shir HaShirim, Israel, in its idyllic state, is referred to as a shoshana ben hachachim, a rose among thorns. Those were the words of Shlomo centuries before Yechezkel. But now, centuries later, in our parak, the thorns that surrounded the beauty of that rose morph into chains. When the nation of Israel is doing well on a moral level, they're the rose among the chochim. But when the nation fails to live up to the principles expected of it, the thorns become chochim. When the nation of Israel is doing well on a moral level, they're the rose among the chochim. But when the nation fails to live up to the principles expected of it, the thorns become chachim. They are sent out of the land in chachim, in chains. This is the kina of our parak. Kinahi vatihila kina. The ultimate sadness about the sharp contrast between what could have been and what has become. Thank you for studying together, Leilui Nishmat Riva Schwab, Rivka Bat Alexander.